Tony Brise, Danny Sullivan, Gordon Smiley, Ted Wentz, Tony Trimmer, Ari Leyendijk, and Alan Holley. They all have something in common. At one point in their lives, they drove a car from the UK known as Eldon. Yep. With me today is Peter Hampshire in what is our first Intercontinental Kennish interview. Peter, thank you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure.
If we go back in time, Eldon was started with the combined efforts of yourself, your brother Brian, as well as John Thompson, with the first model, the MK6, arriving shortly after the introduction of Formula Ford. How did that all come to be, that you got involved in the sport?
I'm an engineer in the originally in refinery and chemical and the mining and metals business. Mm-hmm. I have been interested in motor racing cars since an early age. Mm-hmm. Used to build models and things. And my brother took it more seriously. And he used to say to me, why don't we build a racing car? And I said, yes, okay then. And then he'd get at me, and then I'd start on my drawing board, drawing cars. The first one was a Formula 4 car in 1960-something. And we designed and built, Brian built, I designed a Formula 4 car made out of a sandwich material called malite, which was balsa wood sandwich with aluminium coatings. Used to be used for aircraft floorboards when people had high heel shoes, and they this was a material that became plenty available in the UK. So I designed a car using that as a bulkhead material with a fiberglass body on it. Mm. And that's the Mark IV. I don't know whether you've got a copy of it anywhere. The Mark IV.
I've seen photos, but...
Right, okay. Well, that's a fiberglass fiberglass body with a malite chassis.
Interesting.
And that's where I first built it. It was it was powered initially by a 650 Triumph engine. Mm-hmm. And it did pretty well, had a cooling problems. Mm-hmm. Then after a couple of years, along came Formula Ford. Mm-hmm. I was busy working for American construction company at the time called Bechtel. Mm-hmm. And Brian said to me, let's design a racing car. So I immediately, whenever he says that, I used to get out my drawing board and start drawing the damn thing. That's how we started the first Formula Ford. I think the first Formula Ford was the Mark III. And then came a version of the Formula 4 car, Mark 4 and 5, which mm-hmm. had different engines. And then the first proper Eldon was a Mark 6. Mm. And Brian built the chassis for the Mark 6 and the bodies, and I did the design work whilst I was working on an oil refinery for Bechtel in Milford Haven.
Wow. So if we look at from your first Eldon, the Mark 6, to the last design, which was the Mark 37, I believe, the Sports 2000. You built over 250 racing machines across 37 designs.
How, I think Brian built them. I did the design work, yes.
Yeah, but the firm. Yeah. So how did it come to be that such a small company made so many cars and lasted so long while so many other firms fell by the wayside?
Well, first of all, Brian ran the company. Mm-hmm. I was never able to make a living out of motor racing.
Okay.
Off in refinery and chemical work for major contractors. I've been the project manager and project director in the mining metals business for 50 years.
Okay.
That's what I do to feed the kids and get them through school and pay the mortgage. And Brian has been busy building race cars. Mm-hmm. R8 was probably the most successful with Tony Bryce,
mm-hmm.
and that started the thing roaring off. And I'm not sure how many of those we built, but we started the Mark 6. And then the Mark 7 came along, that was the sports car. We were building a sports car, which was actually bodywork designed by a McLaren designer, Tony Hilden,
mm-hmm.
and I did bodywork. And we started building the Mark 7, but we got so busy building Mark 8s and Formula Fords that we didn't have time for the Mark 7. So we sold that project to a guy called Clark Sturgis,
mm.
who built three cars. Then he abandoned it, and eventually it came back into the Eldon fold as an Eldon Mark 7, sometimes called a Sturgis.
Got it.
But initially had a 1300 engine and then a 2000 engine, and three or four of them around, some in the States, mm-hmm. one in Australia, and they just sort of grow on their own. They have a life of their own, these cars.
Yes.
You ask why we got to 250 or whatever number. Brian was building them in the factory in near Brands Hatch, and we subcontracted all the fabrication and bodywork out.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a question of just buying and assembling and sending them off to customers.
Mm-hmm.
And they picked up in the USA, and they picked up in South America, and it just sort of happened.
Interesting. Interesting. And if we go back, tell me, or for my listeners who are new to the Eldon story, I found this very interesting, but tell us about the Bryce family and how their young standout Carter and future Formula One up-and-comer Tony played an important role in the success of the Mark 8.
Right, well, Eldon's had a bank with Lloyd's Bank,
mm-hmm.
In Dartford, and Tony Bryce's father, John, also worked at that bank. And the manager knew we were looking for some backing,
mm-hmm.
So he introduced us to John Bryce. John Bryce said he wanted a former Ford car for Tony, and so we built a Mark 8 for Tony. Bodywork was done by Marchant and Cox,
mm-hmm.
down in Hastings, who would do a very good job. And we built the first car for Tony, and he went out in the car and he started to win races. And one of the cars that he ran against in the early days was a Macon.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Macon, who makes the Macon, said to me after one race, "I can't stay with that Eldon Mark 8 in the corners. I can hold it on the long bends, but I can't stay within the corners," because it was an 84-inch wheelbase car, whereas most of the rest of them were 87, 88. And the reason why we had an 84-inch wheelbase is because the Formula 4 car I had with the motorcycle engine actually was a 76-inch wheelbase.
Mm.
And I just stretched the car to allow for the Ford engine and the driver to take a lying position, and it sort of grew to a Mark 8. Was never any plan on it.
Mm-hmm.
Never planned to make it 84 inches. But it's as far as I thought I could go with the experience that I had.
Sure. So Tony's successes racked up 33 race wins, 6 lap records in the Townsend Thorson Championship.
Yes.
That said, the Mark and Bryce were really going somewhere at that time, but some people, including Tony himself, didn't know if it was him or the car. So he left.
Was a little bit skeptical about the car.
Mm-hmm.
He thought the car was only doing well because Tony was such a brilliant driver.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony took this dog of a car and he made it win. In the meantime, we had another fellow who was driving a Palliser called Mike Catlow.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Catlow worked for Palliser, who was run by airline pilot Hugh Dibley. And Mike was a car builder for Palliser. And Mike wanted a new car, and he wanted an Eldon. So we did the bits for the Eldon, and Mike Catlow built it in his garage. Now, Mike was an excellent mechanic. His work was impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the first Eldon Mark 8, Mike Catlow's Mark 8 was absolutely immaculate from end to end. And Mike got into that car on the 6th of November 1971.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike was on pole position, and Tony was on the outside front row. And behind him, there was another guy, Chris Smith, who was driving a Merlin. And Mike Catlow won the race. And Tony, who was trying very hard, fell off halfway through, and Chris Smith came up in his Merlin and came third.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly the mighty Tony Bryce was beaten by Mike Catlow, who was a not very highly rated driver,
mm-hmm.
Palliser, and then the phone didn't stop ringing.
It's weird how that works.
Well, I was working for Anglo-American Corporation at the time, down in Ashford,
mm-hmm.
as a senior project engineer. And they wanted me to go to Africa to take over a project in the mining and metals business. And they were offering me some very good money to go to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go, only for a month or so. So I went to Zambia with Anglo and started on a new project. Came back after a month, and then the orders for Mark 8 started coming in tremendously. Mm-hmm. So we subcontracted the building of the chassis to Arch Motors, and the suspension and the bodywork to Marchant and Cox to minimize the amount of in-house work fabrication we needed to do. And we hired people to build the cars, being led by Mike Catlow, who had demonstrated such expertise in making them look right.
Mm-hmm.
And the first Eldons that were built out of the factory were really superb. And we then had a number of American drivers like Denny Sullivan and Ted Wentz and other British drivers who bought the cars, and they started to go out and win.
Mm-hmm.
Tony's father bought another March. He bought a Formula 3 car, and he didn't do so well in his Formula 3 car. Meanwhile, we were winning a lot of cars. We had a number of American contacts, in particular Paul, and one in Chicago, his name escaped me for the moment, and they started buying the cars, and deposits started rolling in.
Mm-hmm.
We started building cars. I'm out of the country, so Brian was building the cars with Bruce Kramer was the man in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So it all started to go from there. Meanwhile, my employers, Anglo-American Corporation, said to me they were very impressed with my racing cars, but they were looking for a project manager. $250 million project in Central Africa, which meant I'd take my family to Zambia for a couple of years. They'd be paying the kids' school fees and six airfares back to the UK. Airfare each holiday back to the UK, and were paying me more money than motor racing was ever going to make.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to my wife, "What should we do?" And she said, "We're off to Africa."
This makes logical sense. You made the right choice. If we go back, you mentioned McLaren bodyman Tony Hilder designing the bodywork for the Mark 8. And then the later rather famous Falconer bodied Eldons were designed by then bodyman, March bodyman Dennis Falconer. It's strange to think nowadays of a Formula One body designer helping design a Formula Ford body. How did those partnerships come around in those days?
Well, they weren't big time at the time. They were struggling out the rest of it, so they were happy to do the work in the lower formulas.
Yeah. Okay. So in 1972, a Falconer-bodied Eldon with a Roland motor won the Formula 4 World Cup event with a young Mexican driver named Johnny Gerber behind the wheel.
That's right.
Did you think the Falconer body would be as controversial as it wound up being?
No, I didn't. I didn't design the Falconer body. It wasn't particularly aerodynamic. And Johnny Gerber and his sponsor had the idea that they wanted to build the car.
Mm-hmm.
I was too busy building Mark 8s and Mark 10s and going with the standard cars. And on that particular race that Gerber won, we had a car in there being driven by Tim Bryce. Tim was Tony's younger brother, who was a very good driver, driving Eldon Mark 8. And Tim was very quick, but unfortunately, he fell off at the first corner. He had a coming together with Sid Fox at Druids. And Tim's car went up and up and up and down. And Johnny Gerber came out of the carnage in front.
Mm-hmm.
And they said to me, "How's Tim? Is he okay?" I said, He is at the moment. But I haven't got my hands on him yet.
Yeah. Wow.
But anyway, Gerber won it. And Gerber's fame spread across the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started to get inquiries for Gerber-bodied cars. And that's how they started, particularly popular in the U.S. and in South America.
Very much so. Yeah, when we acquired our car last year, it had two sets of Falconer bodywork, even though that it originally just had the Mark 10B bodywork to it. So,
we had a race at Willow Springs, which Paul Fanner organized, and we Paul had a Mark 8 of his own, and I sat across a car with a Mark with a Gerber body, being driven by Chris Smith, and Alan Holly was driving the Mark 8 for Paul Fanner. And Chris Smith was driving the one we set across. There are pictures on this on the cover of Motorsport.
Yeah.
I mean to ask Paul Fenner if I could have a copy of that, because I don't have it anywhere. And the mining company that I was working for was called TechPro Mining and Metallurgy. And in order to enthuse them, we put TechPro on the cars and persuaded them to pay the expenses from going across to the States. And when we got a 1-2 win with Gerber and Chris Smith, my mining company was quite pleased with that. So it all became good from then.
So, during the same time frame, in around 72, Eldon struck up a partnership of sorts with Metso Gearboxes, who are a competitor of Hewland. How did this partnership kind of come about?
It's something that Brian was doing. Metso was just starting to build Hewland-type gearboxes, which were in very short supply, and we bought, but because we couldn't get Hewlands, we bought a couple of Metsos, and we put them in a Formula Mark 8 car, one of which went to the racing car show at Olympia in 72. And we made several cars with Metso gearboxes, but most customers wanted Hewlands.
Got it. So in 1974, in large part to the oil embargo and creditors tightening up, Eldon went into liquidation and you took up a job in Zambia.
Well, I was asked to go to Zambia again by the company, this time for 3 years. Manage a major project, and they paid school fees and all the things for the kids, and they made it worth our while. In any case, my wife was quite happy to go to Zambia. The colonial lifestyle with big houses and swimming pools and paid school fees were very attractive. So I did that job for 3 years, and while I was away, we had the miners' strike in the UK, and we were busy making dozens of cars, and then there was a ban on manufacturing, and the government introduced a regulation that said that you could only work a 3-day week, and you couldn't have any power, and the thing just the customers pulled their deposits, and we weren't delivering the cars, and it knocked the stocking out of the company, as it did of most race car companies in the UK.
So a few more Eldons came up between 74 and 77 before Howard Drake, who later on had the Laser Formula Ford, got involved with the name.
Howard Drake was one of the Eldon drivers, and when I was away in Africa, he and Brian got into partnership, and he built some cars, and there was just not enough money around to make the business tick. So while I was away, Howard Drake took over. They built a version of the Mark 7 called the Mark 9, which is now in Australia. And then Howard gave up, I think. Howard Drake gave up.
And so around, I think it was 1980 or so, you, your brother, and Alan Weller got the name, or basically started making cars known as Saracens before the Eldon name.
When Howard Drake pulled out, Brian got involved with guy who took over Swift, Bradley, and he started building Eldons. Meanwhile, I was designing, I had a number of cars on the board. I thought, right, if Frank Bradley is going to use Eldons, we'll have a new name. So changed, got a new name called Saracen, which we built a number of cars for, which are still around. I refer to them still as Eldons because Bradley pulled out and bought Swift after that. And pulled out and left Eldon's flat. So most cars I called Eldon's. I've got the rear upright patterns downstairs. They say Saracen on them because the mag uprights, which are made by Kent Aerospace Castings, were some of the things I felt I had to keep control of. and I didn't want people making aluminium. I'm making aluminium castings in funny old workshops with blowholes in them, and I felt that as a professional responsibility of mine, I had to make sure that the rear uprights and the front uprights were made to a professional standard, and so that their manufacture could be traced through paperwork through a major aerospace company. Because I, as a professional engineer, was very cognizant of the fact that I had a duty of care to the customers to make sure that any parts that were made were made properly. And that duty of care is something which has been with me in my 20 or 30 years in the mining and metals business. I've had lots of occasions where there have been accidents on sites, and where I've been called to give evidence, and I'm very much aware that I have a duty of care. So I tried to maintain that throughout the racing cars.
That makes a lot of sense. My family's business, we make equipment for cleaning and televising sewer pipelines.
We
have to deal with hose safety. We're the largest supplier of thermoplastic sewer cleaning hose in the world. And so dealing with high pressure nozzles and especially hose safety and making sure that everything's in safe for the end consumer, we take that very seriously.
Same business then.
Yeah, very much, very much. So, Peter, if we talk about the history of Eldon, if you could have changed one thing regarding the time frame of when you and Brian were making cars, would there have been anything you would have changed?
No.
Yeah.
But still, if I'd been offered a senior management position by an international mining and metals and oil company, I would have taken it. I've got four kids, this one being the last one.
Yeah.
And I had a duty of care to make sure they got an education and they became qualified people.
That's huge.
We enjoyed the colonial lifestyle. We enjoyed the swimming pools and the big houses. And my last 10 years ago, I was in Australia working on a major project, and that is what I prefer to do. Hillary is happy to come around the world with me. We have lived in many, many countries around the world, and I found that that was a little more exciting than working in the Backstreet workshop. Got a number of Fords and checking the bank balance every day to see if we've got enough money left at the end of the week to pay the wages.
Yeah. Wow.
It's different from building a $100 million process plant for which somebody else is going to pay anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Of all the cars that you penned under the Eldon name, did you have a personal favorite?
I think the Mark 8 was my favorite. The difference between the Mark 8 and the Mark 10, the Mark 8, at the end of 1971, the SCCA and the RSA brought out new regulations for minimum weight, and the minimum weight went up by about 50 pounds, which made the cars a little bit slower. Also, they insisted on a fire extinguisher, which was about 50 pound weight. So the Mark 10s and Mark 8s in their original form are marginally quicker than the Mark 10s. As you could see from that that race at Willow Springs, which we did, Mark 8 was being driven by Alan Holly, and the Mark 10 by Chris Smith. And Alan Holly was very, very quick in that car. And the Mark 10 was just a little bit slower,
mm-hmm.
Although Alan Holly took the wet record.
Wow.
Okay. And so I like the Mark 8. The Mark 10 has a slightly wedged nose because people used to complain to me that the big fish mouth nose had a lot of drag to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we got nagged into a wedged nose and in putting side pods on, but I didn't think it enhanced the look of the cars and it didn't make them any quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So my favorite was the Mark 8.
Okay. So next year, because of COVID, some things got backtracked in our project of our restoration. We'll be finally getting our Mark 10B out on track, carrying on the legacy of our late friend Michael Argertsinger, who raced that car in 1973.
Right.
For someone who will soon be wheeling an Eldon for the first time, what are some things about its handling characteristics that I can look forward to?
Well, as I said, I believe it's quite... It's a lot quicker in the corner
mm-hmm.
than others. I went to New Zealand while I was on an assignment in Australia and saw a chap in Queensborough who'd got a Mark 8
mm-hmm.
and one of the early Mark 8s actually, and he said that he had two cars. He had an Eldon Mark 8 and he had a Swift, and he said if it's good weather, he found his Swift was faster in the fast corners than the Eldons were, but if it started to rain or it got slippery, the Eldon was much faster in the corners than the Swift.
Okay.
So that probably made my mind up that shorter wheelbase cars were a bit better. And downstairs here, I've got a K-Electrics track, and a number of cars on that, and the Minis are definitely quicker in the corners than the race cars.
And that's the thing. The Eagle I race, the Eagle Formula Ford, has a wheelbase of 96 inches. So,
right.
So I'm used to delayed feedback, feeling the back end of the car, and usually by the time I feel it, I'm already too far into the corner where I'm going to have to make a bigger correction, not a minute one. So it's a very interesting car to drive, and I feel the Eldon is going to be a lot more responsive on especially shorter courses that are more like bull rings, where I won't have to be fighting for the feeling as much.
Well, I hope you'll let me know, and I can add it to my list of experiences, because I get a lot of feedback from people driving Mark 8s and Mark 10s, but... interested to hear what you say.
Yeah, and I'll make sure to send you guys video and photos when we debut that car next year.
Love to receive.
Yeah. So if we look back, 52 years have passed since the Mark 6 came to life. How does it make you feel knowing that Eldons are still racing around the world and taking home race wins long after the expectancy of when a race car should stop being a race car?
Well, I don't have much in life, but looking back over 50 years and seeing the Eldons are still running
mm-hmm.
is very satisfying.
Yeah.
I also, I'm now boring you with these projects, but I built a large number of major mining and metals and oil and gas projects around the world,
mm-hmm.
all of which were very successful, and I get a great deal of satisfaction from those projects as well. I also get a lot of satisfaction from my family.
Mm-hmm.
I have four sons, but a daughter as well. So I'm very proud of my family. So family and the cars and the projects are just about all I can fit in.
And that's a full life. It really is. Especially when you have a great family behind you.
So far, so good.
Yes. So, with that, Peter, do you have any closing thoughts you'd like to pass along regarding Eldon, or is there anything else you'd like them to know, or my listeners to know about the Mark?
No, nothing really. It's just rather sorry to keep leaving it to other people to look after whilst I was out playing with projects around the world. But I couldn't do it all. I did all I could from where I was. Brian, my brother, was a very talented designer. He did a lot of the bodywork, and he did the fabrication, but some of the things he did when I wasn't there, I wouldn't have done if I'd been there. Without Brian, it just wouldn't have happened.
Because I
would never in one place long enough to actually make the thing work. So Brian, he pulled it together for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years at it.
Wow.
And Brian died about 2 months ago, which is a great loss. But, got a good report in Autosport, thanks to Marcus Pye. And so, what would I have done differently? I can't remember. I might start again and... no, I've done what I've done.
Wonderful.
No regrets.
Well, Peter, thank you again for joining me today on Kentish. And special thanks to Larry Haynes at LCH Restoration for sponsoring today's episode.
So that when you speak to them.
Yeah. And also thanks to you, Chris Hampshire, for helping set up this interview.
My pleasure.
Christopher is actually carrying the main load for me because, A, I have a memory problem, which he likes to join. And Brian did the Eldon Register in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
And Christopher's taken that over now. He's the only one with enough interest to make it happen.
So he's the one getting all the serial numbers I keep sending in.
Pretty much. Along with Larry's help. Larry's been instrumentally helpful in getting it all together.
Without Christopher, there'd be nobody to carry on the interest. Although, in the UK, Mark 8 Motorsport, run by one of the drivers, Derek Buckton,
mm-hmm.
Keeps it all running up in the north.
Okay.
He keeps the cars, and he's got a number of customers, keep the cars out on the circuits,
yes.
Which is why they're still running today.
In the UK.
In the UK, yes.
Yeah. And there's a large contingent here in the States, and Larry does a fabulous job of keeping us all informed of where we need to go for parts and whatnot, so... It works out well.
Anyway, I'm very grateful to you guys in the States for keeping it running and just keeping it in the limelight.
Yeah, and like I said, I feel it's a great honor. I got to meet Dan Gurney before he passed away, and it's such a great honor to race an Eagle race car. Very much feel I have the weight of Eagle lovers everywhere when I race the Eagle. And
right.
And I hold the Eldon in the same regard, especially knowing it was raced by my late friend Michael. So
right.
So I plan on absolutely taking it to where it needs to be, to the front.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the call.
Yeah.
And for your time and continuing with Christopher.
You got it. Well, Peter, Chris... thank you, guys. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and I'll keep you up to date with the Mark 10 build.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Sean.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen. Cheers. Well, that was a great honor. I hope my listeners who maybe didn't know much about the Eldon Racing Car story going into today can really take away a finer appreciation for what Peter and his late brother Brian were able to do, both with Design Formula and Eldon Racing Cars. In the early 1970s, Eldon was literally the largest racing car manufacturer in the world in terms of sales. Let that sink in for a sec. Later this week, Kentish will profile yet another person in the Eldon story here in the Midwest region of the United States. He's a bit of a local legend, so much so that my dad was curious why I hadn't tracked him down for a Kentish interview earlier. Thanks again to Peter Hampshire for sharing part of his life with us today, and to his son Chris for helping out with the audio-visual part in what was really my first attempt at an overseas interview. If you'd like to know more about the Eldon story, log on to eldonracing.com. It is a fabulous read, and you can check in on some of the other models that we didn't talk about today. Finally, today's interview would not have been possible without the support of LCH Restoration, that being Larry Haynes. Larry is the Eldon man here in the United States and keeps a U.S. registry of cars and is a wonderful source for Eldon pieces and the where, what, and whys of Eldon cars. Thanks again to Larry for sponsoring us today. Until next time, you've been listening to Kentish, the Formula Ford podcast. Cheers.